Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Aubrey from the Port Fishington Group in Philadelphia.
Hi everyone, I'm Aubrey. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
my sobriety date is March 31st, 2009. I have a sponsor who took me through the 12 steps. I sponsor women and take them through the 12 steps, and my home group is the Port Fishington Group. We're actually meeting right now. actually, the meeting's almost over at 8:30, and we're a one-hour speaker meeting just like this. We carry a message of hope, and that's where I heard a message of hope in Alcoholics Anonymous in an AA meeting, and thank God for that because I was such a mess when I got here. And I'm so grateful to be an alcoholic and grateful that I'm willing to drive an hour after working all day, 6 months pregnant, to speak in an AA meeting. Because, I mean, man, it wasn't until I was willing to do stuff like that and, you know, willing to give my life to this program and let go of everything that I thought I knew about life, right, did my life change. And I don't know why that I got to be that person that let everything go. And I remember sitting in meetings like this and being like, I would sit in meetings like this a lot before I got sober, and like I would have different like perceptions of what was going on, and like because my perception constantly changed, and like one of those perceptions would be like, these people are crazy, I'm not that bad, and then the perception would be like, this is crap, I don't need to be here. I would think that, like, this person doesn't know what they're talking about, they're not like me. I would think that. I would think all kinds of things sitting in this room. And I remember for the first time, I got so miserable that I heard somebody for the first time. And I think I probably heard it 1,000 times in AA, like what they were like versus what they were describing, and or like what they looked like. I saw a woman share from the floor just like this, and she described herself in a way that looked like nothing like what she looked like, right? And I don't even remember what she said, and I'll talk about that a little later on, but man, like, thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I could come in here with all those different perceptions at that time, because I was never not welcome back. Even when I was drunk crying in the back, because that was me a lot, I had to be escorted out kindly by women who told me that it's okay, keep coming back, right? I was never asked to leave, like, aggressively or meanly. It was just like, you know, I was just disrupting the meeting, and so, which it was necessary that I left. But so tonight, I'm going to tell you guys a little bit about what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today, and I'll just start from the top. I grew up in a small town in Maryland. It reminds me of, like, my friends came with me, Chris and Kat, and when we were driving here, this is like where I grew up looked like, and like the farms, and you could see all the stars, and I love that. I hated where I was all the time when I was little, so I would not have told you that then. But I grew up with being taught like morals, values. My parents are like super normal people. I remember being brought to church when I was little. I don't remember anything bad ever happening to me, but I remember that, so like when I talk about like, and you hear about this disease of perception, like, and that set aside prayer, that's like, God, please help me see the truth. It's like I had no idea what the truth was, and like sometimes maybe I still don't, but like I'm pretty sure I'm closer than I've ever been. And but at the time, like, I was so just skewed in my thinking, and I wouldn't have been able to tell you that, but and it was this self-centeredness that I felt like way long before I put a drink, like everything mattered so much and how I felt mattered so much. And I remember just being a little kid, just being uncomfortable all the time. I was like the type of little kid that and not like little, so like I'm talking about like middle school, little to middle school, and like I would just always compare myself to others, and this was long before I took a drink, but like I was never like, I was never like content as a child. Like I compared myself to others, I was either way better than you or way less than you. I have a negative ego, which is still ego, that like tells me like I'm way less than you, but it's constant selfishness thinking about myself. And I just remember just never, like, even, like, when I would be playing with my friends, I would think my friends were having parties without me. I would, like, plan, like, what I was going to say to the kids at school the next day, all kinds of stuff. And, like alcoholism for me is that. It's that I, like, even before I picked up a drink, like, alcohol is going to eventually be my solution to the way my head operates. And I just remember being this little weird kid, and I remember someone would have, like, to tell me that I was weird. Even today, like, I'd be like, oh my God, they know how weird I am. You know what I mean? Cause, like, I have a skewed perception. I have weird thinking, and that's why I need God. But, as, like, a 10-year-old, I don't know that, right? So all I know is that, I want people to like me. I'm obsessed with you liking me. And I'll do anything to get you to like me. So I always felt different, from as long as I can remember, just never like a person among people. And, the way I can describe that is like, so I was always comparing myself to others, and my parents always made us go to, my dad made me go to church. So he made us go to this Lutheran church, and we had to go to this communion or baptism. I think it was either baptism or communion. I don't know. But my mom never went, but my mom dressed me. So that day that you have to go, and you, like, present yourself to the church, I think it was communion, and all the little kids are there with their, like, moms and dads, and I'm there with just my dad. I'm comparing myself to others constantly, and I look down, and my mom put me in a red dress, and I look beside me, and, like, all the other little girls are in these beautiful white gowns, and, like, I'm in the, like, dress the color of Jesus' blood, and, like, I'm, like, so embarrassed, and, like, I swear to God, I, like, that moment in my life is, like, the epitome of, like, just how I felt. I just felt different from you, that I didn't have the rules for life, right? And so this is, I don't know, maybe I was, like, sixth grade, something like that. And I also thought that, like, I just needed to reinvent myself. And I would constantly think, if my parents got divorced, I could live in two different places and become a new person. So I was always, like, hoping in my mind as a young kid my parents would get divorced. And because I just didn't like me. And I was like, if I just start over, you know what I mean? I just need to reinvent myself as a seventh grader, you know what I mean? And so I would, like, constantly fantasize my parents about getting divorced, and my cousin's parents got divorced, and I was really jealous of that, and I said that out loud to my grandmother, actually, and my grandmother reminded me of that in sobriety, and I was a little embarrassed that I said that out loud. She's like, remember when you said you were jealous that Jesse's parents got divorced? I was like, oh. It's like, that's one of the things I should keep to myself, and so she got to live in two different places and be two different people. And that's what I always thought it was something better on the next side. Like, there was something better over there. And I was always over here, and what was, like, good was over there. Right? Just, like, discontented. You know? And I like, was so jealous of her. She got to do that. And, so what happened was my first drink was with my cousin, who, dad actually moved a town over when she got to be a different person in that other town. And she invited me. I remember, I'll never forget, I was in eighth grade. And she called me and was like, do you want to come to my dad's house? Her dad works this weird, like, I guess it's not that weird. It was weird at the time, like a third shift. So he went to work at 7 p.m. to whatever in the morning. So we had the house to ourselves. She was like in ninth grade. I was in eighth grade. And she's like, do you want to come over? We're going to drink with these older boys. I was like, absolutely. I can't wait to do that. Never did that before in my life. And I specifically remember what I wore that night. I wore, like, cut-off jean shorts and this button-up American Eagle top that was actually from Value City. And because they would put the line through it, and I would rip out the tag. Because if someone ever saw that and knew it wasn't actually American Eagle, I would die. And I remember it was orange. And I put that on, and I go to my cousin's house, and we meet these boys, and we go to the liquor store, and we get a 40s, like 40s of Old English, and straws. And we weren't in Philly. They drink from straws in Philly out of everything. And we get these 40s, and I drink the whole thing as an eighth grader. And of course, what happens to any eighth grader that drinks the whole 40 is what would happen to someone? You would get sick, black out, throw up. Same thing happened to me, right? I tried to take my clothes off, though. I'll add that. And literally, like, that's how my drinking career looked like. Sick, blackout, clothes off, throw up. And as an eighth grader. And I remember waking up the next morning from that experience. And I remember thinking and being so embarrassed because I was like, did I say all those weird things that I was thinking? Right? Because I didn't remember. I was so terrified. I'm like, did I say, like, what did I say? Oh my God. It was like literally as if I'd been drinking my entire life, and like I was just terrified immediately upon awakening. And I was scared to drink like that. From my first drunk, I was scared to continue to drink like that, right? But fear wasn't gonna stop me for sure. Because it also provided me relief that I didn't even know yet. I didn't know it was going to provide me with relief. And, like, I can tell you exactly what I was wearing. I can tell you that they were wearing, like, New York Yankee caps, the boys. I can tell you exactly what we drank that night. I can tell you that we were in the back of a truck at one point. But I can't tell you a single name of, like, a high school teacher that I had. I work in a high school. I can't tell you, like, pretty much anything about my childhood. But I remember exactly what my first drink was like. And what I wore that night. That's how important that event was for me. And so, like, of course, like, I didn't drink like that continuing throughout high school or anything like that. But throughout high school, I always, like, looked for ways. I feel like what alcoholism for me is, like, I never felt a part of anything. So I always felt like I was, like, just a little bit on the outside. I even felt that way when I got to AA. I was just, like, a little bit on the outside until I did the steps, was I, like, in the center. So I always, like, looked for, like, ways to feel a part of and, like, fill that hole in my soul that I didn't even know existed. And, like, the first thing for me was sports, right? So, like, I was a part of a team, right? And I remember, like, even when I would feel a part of with sports or something like that, I would always have this self-centered fear that would ruin any sort of part of feeling I would have with anything. And I was terrified to be the center of attention because that means people would look at me. And I chose a sport, softball, which I was the pitcher, which is on the center of the field. Everybody is staring at you. And I remember my dad saying to me, and he would make me practice, and I hated it. He would be like, why do you walk out to the mound like that? I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, you walk out there like you have zero confidence in yourself. And I was like, well, Dad, I do have zero confidence in myself. And he would just be so disappointed. He, like, couldn't understand why his daughter was exhibiting signs of, like, this, right? Like he would even say to me, like, before I, like, presented, like, serious alcoholic tendencies, like, what's wrong? Like, what's wrong with you? I didn't know what was wrong with me. No idea. So sports, I tried sports, see if they would make, like, kind of fix me a little bit. And then when I found boys were better than sports. Literally the first boy who kissed me on the cheek and told me I was pretty, I was done. I'm like, okay, we're going to get married. You're going to do your thing and we'll just live in my parents' basement forever, which we did. Without asking them if that would be okay. While, like, people were making plans in high school, like, to go, like, places and do things and, you know, get educations or get jobs, I was literally making a plan to, like, marry this boy. Any other plans I had were super grandiose that, like, would never happen, like, move to France and be a fashion designer. Like, I had zero education around that, zero money and zero ambition. I always, like, looked for things to fill that hole in my soul, and, like, those are things before really alcohol was going to become that for me. And I remember what happened was, I began to pregame before pregames, not even knowing that I was doing that. So, like, you know, in high school people drink, it's, like, normal, and, like, they get together and they drink before they go out. But, like, I would drink before they would drink. And I wouldn't tell people about that, right? That was, like, my thing, right? And I remember specifically my boyfriend at the time questioning my alcoholism. He's like, do you think you're an alcoholic? I'm like, absolutely not. And if you do, you gotta go. Right? And then, because at that point, what I realized that alcohol was doing for me was it was allowing me to participate in life. Right? Like, I had a difficult time participating in life, looking people in the eye, being a part of anything. And when I put alcohol in my body, it numbed me enough that I could go around you guys. Eventually not around anybody. I started to realize, like alcohol was going to help me in life, right? So I started drinking all the time. Like, I would drink before class. I went to community college down the street from my parents' house. Eventually I started drinking too much before class that I just wouldn't even go, right? I would just overshoot the mark a lot of times. And eventually I overshot the mark too many times. I got a DUI, my first DUI, I like hit a telephone pole, and I remember waking up and like in the car, and the cops came and all that stuff, and they were like, are you okay? Like, do you need to go to the hospital? I'm like, no, I'm fine. They're like, okay, then walk this line. I'm like, actually, my head is really hurting. But you can get a DUI in the mail because they take your blood. So, like, got one in the mail. And I remember after that, like, I instinctively knew that people were going to start really actually questioning the way I drank. Right? And like, I instinctively knew I needed to protect that more than anything else, because at this point I needed alcohol as much as I needed to breathe. So I started drinking secretly, right? So I started hiding my drinking from people, right? Because that makes the most sense. If I hide it, nobody will know. And turns out, like, even if you drink vodka, you smell. I always like thought I was just like nobody would know. So I would just drink vodka, and then I got a blown gun in my car, so I couldn't do that anymore. And at this point, I was, it was suggested to me that I go to AA. I think I went to an outpatient program, and they suggested I go to AA. And I went to AA a couple times, and I remember I couldn't go to AA sober. That was for sure, because I couldn't be around you sober. I couldn't be around people. So I would drink a couple shots before, and my friend would drive me to AA. And the AA that I went to in Maryland was, it was just the one or two meetings that I went to, just really unattractive to me. I was 21 years old, not ready to do anything, and couldn't imagine being an alcoholic. I was like, I don't want to be an alcoholic. It's like the worst thing to be. And I was like, and I would sit in the meeting and like just a little wasted, like nothing crazy at that time. And I swear to God, and I would just like hate myself, because I knew that like I had a problem with alcohol, but I wasn't ready to do anything about it. And it's like someone would come up to me, I would brush them off, or I'd pretend, you know what I mean? And then eventually I ended up in a rehab program for the first time, and I remember reading the steps on the wall, and I was like, okay, I can do those. And I got out of the rehab, and I went to AA, and I got a sponsor. And I remember that sponsor, this is what AA did for me when I was new and unwilling. I knew that I could always come back here, and that's why it's so important to have home groups and be a consistent member of your home group, because then if I leave and I come back, I see you're still there. I know it's working just by default. So that's what I would do. I would come back, I would see the same faces, but I wasn't ready to do anything. And I remember this one sponsor, man, like she tried to help me so much. She would dump my alcohol out all the time. She just like went above and beyond. And I remember she told me to write a fourth step. I did a third step with her drunk. And she just like laid down her life for me and like didn't know like what to do with me. And my parents, like, she would talk to my parents, right? That's what we do. We help each other's like families. And because my parents were so baffled, like, what's wrong with my daughter? My dad would ask me, like, what's wrong with you? What happened to you? Why are you doing this? And I would look at him and like, I don't know. I had no idea. I had nothing to blame it on, right? I didn't. I had nothing to blame it on. So I would come to AA, and then eventually I got a blow and got in my car, so I would come sober sometimes. They made me chairperson of this AA meeting. So I'd be super shaky, super scared, and I couldn't look you guys in the face, and I would read like this. And, I just wasn't willing to do anything because I didn't even know what alcoholism was. I didn't know I had an allergy, that it, like, once I start drinking that I wouldn't be able to stop. I didn't know that. I didn't know that, like, self-centered fear was a part of my alcoholism. I didn't know that God was the solution. I didn't know any of that. And I didn't know the 12 steps was what I was supposed to do either. I don't know why. I was like probably said 1,000 times and on the wall. I didn't know you had to do them with a sponsor. I didn't know you had to change, you know, not do the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. And even if I did know it, I wasn't willing to do it. And so eventually I moved on to different forms of alcohol, and that was, you know, it just brought me to my knees quicker. And I end up in a long-term rehab. And at this point, I'm like so miserable, right? Super miserable. I don't want to drink anymore. And I don't know how to not drink anymore, which I think is like a great place to be, not knowing how to stay sober. I didn't know how to stay sober, and so I went to this long-term treatment, and they told me to get a sponsor. I had to stay there for 3 months. They told me you couldn't smoke cigarettes in there, so we would all smoke cigarettes from the vents in the bathroom. And then eventually people started getting high in that, or getting drunk in that rehab. And I remember I told on everyone, right? So, like, I did. I told on everyone. But I also got drunk in that rehab. And I remember I got kicked out a couple weeks later from this long-term treatment center because I was causing problems and smoking cigarettes in the vent. And I remember throwing a fit, like, how could you do this to me? They're like, you're not ready to stay sober. It was like, why would you even want to stay? And I remember they kicked me out, and I end up back at my parents' house, and my parents at this point were like, you have 24 hours to get out. Get out. I don't care where you go, but you're not staying here. Best thing they could have ever said to me. And I was so upset, and I was sober, maybe like 10, 20 days. And I called my sponsor, and I said to her, and we hadn't done any steps or anything like that. And I was like, and her name was Heather at the time. I was like, Heather, I don't want to drink, but I'm afraid I'm going to drink. And she was said to me, she's like, get on your knees and say a prayer. I'll be there in 20 minutes. So I'm at my parents' house alone. My sponsor's going to be there in 20 minutes. I get on my knees and I pray. I say, God, please just help me stay sober. God, please help me stay sober. And I go upstairs to my parents' liquor cabinet, which they deadbolted shut. It was wood. I cut it open, like, you know, get it open and, like, jiggle it, cut it. Not the chain, but I drank. That's how bad I wanted to take a drink. After praying, after calling my sponsor, after all that, right? I'm powerless over taking a drink, right? Unless I do something. And that, like, that step one for me was so important because, and not that I'm even going to stay sober after this, it's like, I'm a real deal alcoholic, right? Of the hopeless variety. I will drink, I will step over your body to take a drink. And I end up taking a drink, and I end up getting kicked out of my parents. I end up in another rehab again, and this is maybe like my fifth or sixth rehab, third or fourth detox, psych ward, whatever. So what happens for me is I use an address, and so I'm from Maryland. I use an address in PA to go to this rehab in Pennsylvania because I use my free rehabs up in Maryland, Yeah, and this is like 10 years ago. I don't know if that still exists. It's like you can use up all your rehabs. I don't think so. But so I end up in this rehab, and I remember for the first time, like, I started to see things differently. I started to see that, like, I was the problem. There was no other reason other than me, and, like, I had to do something, right? And I remember in this particular rehab, there was this girl who got there 3 days before me, and her name was Sue, and they called her Kicker Sue. And Kicker Sue started to talk to me about AA in a way I'd never heard it talked about before. And she talked about it with, like, this joy in her eyes and her, like, the way she described it. Like, it was, like, fun for her. But, like, she was just like me. She, like, got sober 2 days before me, ended up in the same rehab as me. But, like, I heard her for the first time. I heard someone in AA for the first time, and like I knew she was just like me, and I knew that she loved AA. And her sponsor would bring her cigarettes, and I thought that was awesome too. And so like she made AA attractive to me. And I was never attracted to AA before. I thought I was sentenced here. And so she was like, why don't you stay? I was in York, Pennsylvania. She's like, why don't you stay in York, Pennsylvania and go to a recovery house? Because I thought I had to go back to Maryland, Frederick, or Baltimore. That's where my people are. And she's like, why don't you just stay here? And so when my counselor was like, okay, I'm going to send you to rehab in York, I was like, okay. That's all I had to say. It was okay. And so I go to this recovery house in York, Pennsylvania. And they tell me to do a bunch of stuff, like get a job, get a home group. I was like, what's a home group? Get a commitment in that group, get a sponsor and work the 12 steps. Do your chore, take the bus, don't eat in your room, all kinds of stuff they told me to do. And I was like, okay, I can do most of those things, right? So I did. I did do most of those things. So I went to the first meeting I went to. There was a lady sharing from the floor, and she was really scary. So I was like, she's going to be my sponsor. So I asked her to sponsor me. And what this woman did for me is what women have done for me in Alcoholics Anonymous since I got sober, is like she laid out her life for me, and she was as willing as I was. And what she would do, she didn't drive. She would walk like maybe a mile or so from her house to my recovery house, and she started taking me through the steps. And we went through the steps relatively quickly. And I did a fourth and fifth, and I started to make amends to my family. I remember reading my parents the nine-step promises at a diner. I was just so excited about them. Mm-hmm. And this is what happened for me. I would go to work late, right? Smoke lots of cigarettes at work. Like, take really long breaks. I didn't get a home group, but I did get a car. I would go to the gym all the time. I got a boyfriend. What else did I do? I might have followed some of the rules in the recovery house, right? So one day I was cleaning a house. So I cleaned houses when I got sober. And one day I was cleaning a house when I got sober, and I walked by some alcohol. I walked by it again. And the third time I walked by it, I took some and then pocketed some and had a really good time cleaning. And the next day, you know, the allergy happened, right? So like all the alcohol was gone from the day before. I went and got more alcohol, right? Just like that. Not even a thought that was going to happen that day. And I didn't understand why. And eventually, like maybe a couple days later, they kicked me out of the recovery house. I ended up staying in a really crappy motel for a couple days with one of my recovery house boyfriends. And I remember knowing that there was a solution in Alcoholics Anonymous, and the type of solution that was like joyous and free. And God reliant. Like I heard all those things. I knew all those things were real. And I drank anyway, and I didn't understand why. And so I end up, like my last drink was a 6-pack of Miller Lite in a bathroom in this really disgusting place. Barricaded myself at 9 a.m. because my parents were knocking on the door to try to take me to, I think the psych ward. And so I end up in the psych ward for the last time. This is when I actually get sober. I end up in the psych ward for the last time on March 30th. Yep. 2009. And I'll never forget because I end up in the psych ward that day, and I was so resentful because there was a girl in my house celebrating a year of sobriety in my recovery house. And I was so mad. I thought everyone should be at the psych ward visiting me versus going to her talk for her year. That's like literally what I thought. And I remember calling the recovery house and then like repeatedly to tell them how like upset I was, and like them repeatedly telling me that they can't come because they're going to Monica's celebration. And I just remember being so resentful and so miserable. And I also remember that the guy I just bought alcohol from had been in this, was in the psych ward too when I walked up in my little gown and he was in his little gown. And I just wanted to curl in a ball and just cry. And I did, feeling super sorry for myself. And I remember I had a big book and I was reading A Vision for You, crying, like, you know what I mean? I can't believe this happened again, because I knew there was a solution here. And I get out of the psych ward and I end up at an AA meeting that, like, a Tuesday night. I will never forget, a Tuesday night. The speaker ended early. It was a male speaker, a one-hour speaker meeting. He ended significantly early, so they called somebody up to finish the hour. And this girl stood up, and she said, her name was Heather, she's an alcoholic. I remember that. And then she shared, what I remember her sharing was that she used to drown herself in a toilet in jail to get meds. And what I saw was something completely different, was a woman of dignity and grace that could look people in the eye. And but I knew she was just like me, the way she, what she shared. And so I literally, chased this woman down after the meeting. Like, I chased her. That's how I remember it. I'm pretty sure it happened that way. And I like to remember it that way. So I'm going to remember it that way, that I, like, literally, because I was afraid I was going to miss her. Because the way that I felt inside that day, like, I never wanted to feel like that again. Ever. I didn't want to see the look on my family's faces ever again. I didn't want to feel that disappointment. I didn't want to feel that disgustingness I felt from the inside out ever again. And so I chased her down, and she, I asked her if she would sponsor me, and she said yes, of course. And she gave me 5 things to do every day, one of which was to call her. So I did, and she would answer most of the time. And what she would do is similar to what other women did for me in AA. And she would drive multiple times a week to meet with me, but specifically on Saturday nights was her home group, right? So her home group was 5 minutes from her house. I lived 25 minutes from her house. She would drive 25 minutes to my recovery house to pick me up, 25 minutes back to her home group, and then another 25 minutes back to drop me off and do step work with me that night. On a Saturday. Like, on a Saturday, I'm like, wow, she has no life. And I remember, like, half the time it's not what people say, it's their actions. And, like, because I don't remember what she said, like, any exact thing she ever said to me. I don't. But I remember exactly what her actions were. I remember she took me to, my family was, like, kind of cut me off, and I remember she took me to her family's house for my birthday. And her sister, who's not one of us, birthday is the day before me, shared her birthday with a recovering alcoholic. I'll never forget stuff like that. And she was outlining my 4-step, and my previous 4-step, I actually was an honest one. I thought I was, but I wasn't. And, because I can't see the truth. And because I wasn't asking God to help me see the truth or doing any of the steps, really, other than just, like, casually writing a 4-step. And so when I did this 4-step, I remember she was either outlining it or I just did it, and we were sitting on the back porch of my recovery house, and the wind was blowing, the leaves, it was like fall, the leaves were changing, and I just remember for the first time in my entire, I think I was 23 years old when I got sober, 23 years of existence, did I ever feel at peace, was that day. And that came from God, right? I was asking God for help, I was praying, I was asking to do His will, I was about to do a 4-step. I became consistent with my actions. I got a home group. I was showing up even though I hated it. And that's that feeling I was looking for my entire life, to just feel okay. And most of the time pretty happy, right? But just that feeling of okayness and stillness was enough to keep me moving on. And so I did the rest of the steps with her, and I had previously made amends to my parents, right? And I told you how I read the 9-step promises to them. And And then drank, right? So it's like I wasn't directed to make amends directly to my parents again. And they didn't want to hear it anyway. They really didn't. So I started to do things differently with them. So I started to stop calling them and asking them for money. I started to stop overdrawing my bank account by being irresponsible. So I didn't have to call them to ask them for money. I started to call them and ask them how they were. I started to show up to their house and leave it nicer than how I found it. I was told to give my employer a dime for their nickel. Don't care if your boss sucks, right? Like, still do it. I still do that today and my boss sucks, promise. But that doesn't matter. I give them a dime for the nickel. And, so I started to have different, outlooks on life. And, it wasn't because I just decided to have a different outlook on life. So I thought I could think my way into different thinking, right? But I can act my way into different thinking. So my actions had to change, and therefore my perception changed. And I had to trust and rely upon God and ask God for help because I don't have the power to do that. And so I started taking different actions, and I started to see life differently. I remember that literally physically things looked different, right? I began to feel different. My desire, the best part about this whole entire thing that I like, I didn't think about drinking. I thought about drinking every single day since I started drinking. So from like 14 to 23, like that's all I thought about was alcohol. And I remember they would be like, one day at a time, like 1 minute at a time. Like I was like, there's like a beer store on every corner. Like, how do you not think about drinking? I just didn't understand like how that was possible. And it's like, I think one day at a time, like that came from, I don't know. I'm actually not going to say, because I don't know. And somebody might know in here. So, but my experience with it is that, it's a result of the 12 steps that I'm able to live one day at a time. And so I got sober and I started helping women. My sponsor told me early on that every single experience that I've had in my drinking and in my sobriety will be useful to someone else. So my whole entire life I thought the more you take, the more you get, right? So I was like, makes sense. Like just the more you take, the more you get. Turns out what the 12 steps do is like the more you give, the more you receive, right? So like maybe not in material things, but in peace, that's for sure. And I started to help other women and make that a priority in my life. We were talking about helping others on the way here, me and my friends, and it's like I don't ever want to not be inconvenienced for AA because that might mean I'm on the way out. Right? So it's like, it's not always convenient, right? Like, I remember when they would tell me to get a home group. I'm like, well, I never know what I'm going to do on a Tuesday. You know, you never know. And it's like, I, like, make my home group, like, the one of the most important things. It's like, I have to call out. That's what I say. Like, I tell girls I sponsor, it's like, your home group should be so important that it's like, you have to call out of it. Like, that's how you set your sobriety up. That if, like, you don't show up, like, you're, where are they? You know what I mean? And I started helping women, and I was super excited because, like, AA saved my life. It literally changed the way I looked at life. It saved me. Like, ask my parents. They will tell you that it saved my life, and it saved theirs, too, because they can sleep at night now. And so I started helping others, and I remember I was working at a deli. Maybe like 6 months over, I'm working at a Wise Market. I loved it. I love deli meat. And I swear to God, I really do. Like, I love lunch meat so much. And at the time, like, I actually liked it. Now I'm like more so like we're not eating a lot of meat in our lives. But like, so I never felt so much joy in just like completing a simple task. Like, I could never complete simple tasks, like, with, like, just, it was just so simple. It's like, I just have to show up at work, be a good employee, go home, go to AA, be useful to my family. Simple, right? Like, I can never look at life, and like, because my whole life, everything revolves around me. So like, the less life revolves around me, the more simple things are. It's like, most good ideas are simple. Most good ideas don't involve me thinking about myself, like, as hard as I can think about myself, because I can spend hours doing that. So I'm doing that, and my sponsor said to me, she's like, God will allow you, if you keep AA and God in the center of your life, you can go anywhere and do anything. And that's one of the promises. And I was like, okay. I was like, well, I don't know what I want to do. And I was like, well, someone was like, why don't you go be a teacher? I was like, okay, sounds like a good idea. And so I went back to school. And what AA did for me is, like, I literally had girls who went to school, like, take me to the school. I went to the school called York College. They, like, walked me there. The cool part in AA, you're not doing anything alone anymore. And if you feel like you're doing things alone, you don't have to. Right, so like, I don't have to do anything alone anymore. I still don't have to do anything alone, and because there's always one of us willing to, who have already had that experience, willing to share it. And so I had girls take me to school and show me what it was like, walk me to my classes before the first day, so I knew exactly where to go, so I didn't look lost. And I remember praying, and I remember my sponsor telling me, she's like, "You're gonna do exactly what you do in AA. You're gonna sit up front. You're going to ask for help when you need it, and you're going to offer your classmates help when they need it." And, like, if you practice those principles in class, you'll do really well in school. I'm like, I'm going to offer my classmates help. And I did do that. Like, there was plenty of opportunity to be helpful in college. And so I did that, and I did pretty well. And I remember my dad. So my dad was, like, a huge proponent of education. He was a pharmacist. He didn't understand, like, why I wasn't good at math. He didn't understand, like, why I was not, like, just into education at all. And, I remember he used to bribe me with my grades, and he would be like, "Aubrey, if you just get a C in math, I'll buy you a puppy." Right? That's what he said. "If you just get a C in math, I'll buy you a puppy." And then he's like, "If you get a B in math, I'll buy you a car," or something like that. And then eventually he's like, "If you just pass, please just pass." And I remember him just, like, looking at me so disappointed and, like, so disgusted that, like, I just couldn't do well in school. And it's not because I wasn't smart, it's because I cared zero about it. Because I was too concerned with myself and, like, what I wanted to do. And so when I went back to school, my dad was really happy, and I eventually had the opportunity to transfer to Temple University and go to school at Temple, because I met a guy in AA, and then he moved to Philly. And one thing that I did was this. So, like, every time I would get into a relationship in my life, that became number one all the time, because I love to feel good, right? And that's, like, one thing that we can use to feel good. It's a relationship. I love that. And so... I was really mindful of that, and I relied heavily on sponsorship and women and God to provide me with direction. And so when I was dating this guy in AA in York, he was like, "I'm moving to Philly." I was like, "Okay." He's like, "I'd like you to come." I was like, "Okay, but I can't right now." Right? I was like, "I can't right now." There's no way I would have ever said that in the past. Right? No way. I'd be like, "Okay, drop school, drop this, drop that. Like, you know, that's most important." So I didn't. I didn't go for about 6 months because I had to finish a semester at school. And then I eventually came to Philly, transferred to Temple. And what happened was that they asked me at Temple, they were like, "Where do you want us to send your diploma?" So I was about to graduate. I was like, and I put in my parents' address. And the reason I put it in is because we were in the transition of moving houses. I was afraid that my diploma would get lost. Like, I didn't want that to happen. So I put in my parents' address, and my dad calls me one day, and he says, "Aubrey," he's like, "I got a letter from Temple University." Super concerned, because he's gotten plenty of letters from community college when I went there, because I failed out 5 times. Super concerned, and I'm offended that he's concerned. But I was like, "Dad, open the letter," right? And so he opens the letter, and he's like, and the letter says, "Dear Aubrey Kuyon, you're in the top 12% of your class. You're graduating, like, I think magna cum laude or something." And my dad got to read that, right? And that's the cool part about Alcoholics Anonymous. And like, I didn't like know that letter was going to go to my dad. My dad got to read it. And I remember he cried and was so happy. Like when I walked across the stage, like I was not going to walk across the stage at Temple. And, because I thought I was too old and I should have done it before. And my sponsor told me, she's like, Aubrey, it's not about you. This diploma is not about you. Graduating from Temple is not about you. And so I did. I walked across the stage and my parents got to watch me do that. And my dad thinks I'm the president of the United States. he does, it's embarrassing, sometimes, but I let him gloat. And then I applied for this, this program called Teach for America. And so they place you in a school and you get to teach and, you know, they place you in a high need school. And then, I also applied to go to the University of Pennsylvania for my master's. I got to do that. And again, I failed out of community college 5 times. My dad got to watch me watch, and my mom got to watch me walk across the stage there too. And I, as I built my life for myself, A was always in the center of it. So again, it's like I always like keep AA in the center. And you know, and I never come too far away from the center. Because there might be times that I might like see it out here. But I'm never on the edge. And because I have that strong foundation, I talk to my sponsor regularly. I have girls that I sponsor. I have meetings that I go to on a consistent basis, including my home group. And if those are all in place and my prayer life's in place and my willingness to help newcomers are in place, like I can have a full life, right? When I moved to Philly, it took me a little bit to get a home group because I had school and like I hated it at first, but I did it. It's like being a newcomer in AA again and like, and it was fine. I came to AA till I liked it. The same way as like when I got here, I hated my home group in York. And I stayed until I liked it. I don't just stop things because I don't like them anymore. I don't like a lot of things that I do, but the results I get from them are positive. And then eventually I come to love it because like I know I can't trust my thinking half the time, right? But I can trust the results. So I've been sober for a little bit. I got to build a life. I got to get married to a man that I love. I always hate this part about AA, like when people like start talking about that, because it's like when I was a newcomer, I could give a crap, right? I swear to God, I'd be like, oh my God. I got to marry a man that I love. And we get to be partners in life, you know, and he gets to remind me that we're partners, you know, and not adversaries sometimes. And we have a really beautiful life and a beautiful dog, and we're going to have a baby in the next 3 months, which is really cool. And we've had a really, a pretty rough 2 years. And one of the things is like, God has like, I always like hear people say it's like I feel disconnected from God. I feel disconnected from God, and I felt disconnected from God, right? And it's like my feelings just like don't dictate my actions anymore. So like when I feel disconnected from God, like I seek more, and by seeking I get connected, and it might take a while, right? I had to get a new sponsor. My sponsor, like I was sober 8 years. My husband was diagnosed with cancer, my sponsor drank, and I had to get a new sponsor. Like, and I didn't even get a new sponsor right away, and she drank and then got sober right away. I was like, I'll just keep her. No big deal. I didn't talk to anybody about it. But she was sponsoring me drinking when my husband was diagnosed with cancer, and like it went fine, actually. I didn't know. But then I did. I got a new sponsor, and it's been like such a wonderful experience because we would read the set aside prayer all the time. Like she's like 30 years sober, and like she has some of the same experience like that I have had in the last year. So last 2 years, her husband's been really sick, and my husband has been really sick, and And just watching her be a human while still practicing these principles reminds me that I can be human with girls I sponsor too, in a way that I never thought I could be, and that helps me grow and it helps my girls grow, because it's okay to be human with each other. And the last thing I want to say is that, like, when, like, God is so strong, like, just powerful in my life. My husband was diagnosed with cancer. I was trudging to AA meetings, like, angrily, constantly. And I remember walking up to this AA meeting. I have 2 minutes. And there was this girl sitting out the AA meeting crying, just like I was. Like, I was the crier. And I was like, oh, my God, this girl's crying. Like, I don't feel like talking to anyone. But I go up to her, and I'm like, hi, I'm Aubrey. And I start telling her a little bit about my drinking and kind of hear a little bit about her drinking. And I was just so miserable and so self-centered and focused on, like, what was happening in my life. And God plops in front of me this new girl that was the most willing girl I've ever had in my entire life. She's sitting over there. And, like, she literally saved my life. Like, and God put her there. And I believe that wholeheartedly, because, like, I was so angry with God that why is this happening in my life? I did everything right once I got sober in the right order, and like, and I have this girl, and like, and it just, like, God reminds me that it's, like, not about me. It's not about me, and it's like, if I just keep doing the actions in front of me, everything will be okay. Everything will be okay. And I hope that any of you who aren't experiencing peace, get to experience the 12 steps so you can get that peace. Thanks for letting me share.